Merry Christmas from the Cultivating Hearts radio program. We're back in the studio with Miss Tara, and we have Hosanna and Jackie and Hannah and myself, Sandy. And we are working in James 5, 1 through 6. And we've talked a lot about the warnings in this chapter of 1 through 6, but we're going to ask a question of what is our poverty?
Yeah, in order to understand our wealth, our riches, we have to know our poverty. So as I go through the passage, I'm going to have Hannah, would you read the James 5, 1 through 6 for us? And we'll look at that again because this is what we're looking at. Now, the difficulty with this passage, you guys, it's a really harsh warning. You need to go back and listen. I think it's a passage we don't want to listen to, but we need to listen to because it helps us to get right with God.
So James 5, 1 starts, "Look here, you rich people, weep and groan with anguish because of all the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away, and your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver have become worthless. The very wealth you were counting on will eat away your flesh like fire. This treasure you have accumulated will stand as evidence against you on the day of judgment. For listen, hear the cries of the field workers whom you have cheated on their pay. The wages you held back cry out against you. The cries of those who harvest your fields have reached the ears of the Lord of Heaven's armies. You have spent your years on earth in luxury, satisfying your every desire. You have fattened yourselves for the day of slaughter. You have condemned and killed innocent people who do not resist you."
All right, to set the stage this time, I want to give you a little bit of understanding of what happened back then. The society was very divided as far as the extreme wealthy and the extreme what would be considered poor. And the landowners would work workers, but oftentimes they would hold back that what would be wages so that they couldn't buy food or garment. In fact, in numerous places when I would go through and study on the history, they would say that the people who were not a part of the higher society often would only have one garment. That's it, one garment. And whereas then to have a group of people where they may not have as many garments, they like our culture today, our closets are filled, they still didn't have a whole lot of garments within even the wealthy. But they would have nice ones, and maybe like a nice one for the everyday, a nice one for dress and stuff. And so people didn't have the abundance of the garments that we have. And that the workers would work for their wages, but often they would allow them to glean. After they've worked for the day, they could have what was left over. And if they wouldn't allow them to leave stuff that would fall, then they not only robbed them of pay, but they would also rob them of the food. And that is culturally what is happening at this time when he is writing this. And so he's letting them know that it is crying out, and God is hearing this travesty that's occurring culturally within the culture. And so that's part of why this warning is so strong. So it gives us a little background.
So that's why he's talking about murder here. It's
right.
You know, because he's starving them.
Correct. Literally. And that, you know, families cannot survive. And so they would go long periods of time without food, and their clothes are not able to protect them from the weather. It's just a vicious cycle that they're in. And they would have huge feasts that would happen that would be like within the city. And for a lot of the workers, and this is the largest part of culture, the only time they ever experienced or tasted meat would be at one of these festivals. Because they would bring in all the animals and have the meat. And so the only way they would actually get to taste even what meat is like is if they were actually at one of these events, because they would slaughter all these animals. They didn't have the refrigerator system, and so they had to eat it that day. And that's when the poor people actually had meat for the first time, because they could salt it, but you know, it would only last so long. And so a lot of people never experienced even like what we consider normal in North America to eat meat. And so that was a part of what was occurring. So I want us to be thinking, he's wanting them to get this right. And so he's warning them, and he says, you should weep and groan with anguish because of the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away. Your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver are corroded. It's the three types of things that we store up. And if you think about it, it's just the things that we actually fight over, which is just crazy. My son and we don't really as a family go out amidst the Black Friday crazies. Like we'll go shopping or something, but it's usually after all the crazies have happened. And we were trying to find another group that were at our house on Thanksgiving that went to Walmart. And my son and I were like, well, let's go find them. So we walked in and they were unwrapping, I think it was a digital fryer. Something you deep fry things in.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And as the plastic wrap was being pulled off this huge crate that they had sat down, people were like running to get to these deep digital fryers. And my son looked at me and he goes, wow, Mom. And he goes, I didn't know a digital fryer was that important. And he goes, I've never seen this Black Friday thing. And I didn't tell him in the store. I waited till the next day and I said, Grant, I was actually afraid in that moment. I thought, oh, wait, these people aren't just out just having fun. It's Christmas, getting ready kind of stuff. They're like, I want the stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were going in to get chai tea. It was like I'd run out of chai. I was like, okay, maybe I need to let go of my chai tea. We can get to where we get crazy about things.
Yeah.
And we have to know, where does that begin? It begins with a poverty. Mm-hmm. And what is that poverty? Where does that poverty start?
In the heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if we went back into Matthew 5 and we looked at the Beatitudes and how he goes through the process of each thing that he wants, he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Poor is not poverty of wealth. It's the poor of the heart, the condition of the heart. And the first four deal with conditions of the heart, that if our heart's not right with God, we're not going to be blessed. And then the next ones that follow, the next four are about what we do to others when we get our heart condition right. So if I'm willing to be poor before God and recognize I need God, if I'm willing to mourn because I don't have a right relationship with God, if I'm all the things that he's building up to, then I won't be a person who is merciful and a peacekeeper and do the things that he wants me to do as far as serving others. And so it has to begin first with a condition of the heart. And we could do a whole series just on how James teaches actually the Beatitudes. It's all embedded within the book of James that he goes through and shows the Beatitudes. So I want us looking at this now, this time, where is our poverty? And what does that look like? And how to get the condition of the heart right? So what do you guys do to get your heart right with God?
I think a heart check starts for me a lot often with a person I trust, and just processing where I'm at and what I need to do as far as taking steps. And often that involves prayer and silence.
Okay. Yeah, I think we talked last time about accountability partners. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It always goes back to the same thing.
It does. It really does.
It is every single time. It's like we just keep repeating ourselves just with a different passage.
Yep.
What else do we do?
I'm a stubborn person, so usually it takes like God really, I don't know, allowing it to punch me in the face and to really feel like the weight of how much I've let it, I don't know, put itself on me or take over my life. And he just starts revealing like piece by piece those areas, and I have to kind of deal with it, each piece kind of separately, because it's overwhelming sometimes how much it just has crept into my life, and I have to repent of it and turn it back to him, because I can't take it by myself.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes it's very subtle too. It's just like, well, where'd that come from?
If I am recognizing a poverty of spirit in my heart, where I have placed riches, wealth, food, clothes, things, people over my relationship with God and others, it's usually because I've not had time in the Word to know the righteous one. Remember how we talked last time about it was his righteousness and his love. And so it's, I find my love gets displaced. Mm-hmm. And all right, I'm gonna say this out loud. My phone can be my greatest distraction, mm-hmm. because of the fact that as soon as I wake up, I need to know what happened on campus. I will check to see, do I need to respond to, was there an issue that occurred? I need to see what the reports were that came in. And so every morning, as part of my morning routine that I have added in my time since I've come to Grace, is that I will check to find out what has happened so I know what I need to prepare for. Right. And initially that started so I would know how to pray into my day. But over time, I found that it would take longer and longer, and it would rob me of the time I've set aside for God. Mm-hmm. And so I can tell when we're in a season of things happening, I really struggle because I have to go through that stuff, and I have to make sure I get in the Word first. Mm-hmm. And so for myself, it's I have to make sure that I don't pick the phone up before I've picked up my Word. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's one place that I have found that can rob me of my yep. spiritual righteousness, holiness, the gifting of what he gives to us. And before I worked at Grace, I didn't have to do that. And so it wasn't a part. And so my mornings were so leisurely and all about the Lord. And then to have this new aspect introduced, I found I had to constantly fight the battle of I need to deal with these things. I need first to go to God. Anybody else do that?
Oh, yeah.
I'm the only one that has that sin?
Nope. Not alone.
Okay, so this, what it comes down to is it's asking the question then, what do I do with my resources? Because if I know that I can't have the poverty of spirit, I need to have my spirit filled with his righteousness and his unfailing love through his word and prayer and accountability, wise counsel that we just talked about, then what am I doing with the resources that he's given me? And so we're going to look at some scriptures and what the scriptures have to say about our wealth and our resources. So Hosanna's going to start off with Proverbs 11:28.
Yeah, and it goes ahead and it says, whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf.
Hmm. Okay, that's so beautiful. I want to be the green leaf. Jesus, make me a green leaf, right?
Yes. Because
mm-hmm. righteousness, when I have taken the time to fill myself with him, I'm a green leaf. I prosper. A leaf is something, I mean, they're just beautiful to look at. Even in the season changes, leaves are amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I want that fruit. Okay, let's go to the next one. Jeremiah 22:13-17.
Woe to him who builds his house without righteousness and his upper rooms without justice, who uses his neighbor's service without pay and does not give him his wages, who says, I will build myself a roomy house with spacious upper rooms and cut out its windows, panel it with cedar and paint it bright red. Do you become a king because you are competing in cedar? Did your father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? Then it was well with him. He pledged the cause of the afflicted and the needed. Then it was well. Mm. Is not that what is mean to know me? Is that what it means to know me, declares the Lord? But your eyes and your heart, are you intent upon your own dishonest gain and shedding innocent blood and practicing oppression and extortion?
Okay. This verse, actually, you think of the prophet of Jeremiah. It could have easily have been written in the day of Jesus as well, based on the things that I've read about what was happening with the wage earners. But so they were totally not being just, and that they weren't being righteous. And the people that would build their palaces would just this opulence, and it's just the people would suffer. And I know when I was on a mission trip in Russia, I went and toured a lot of the palaces. As part of what they would do is we'd go into an area, we'd minister, and they'd show us a palace. And I didn't say a lot. I should say we toured a couple. Catherine the Great was known for having a winter, a spring, a summer, and fall palace. She had a palace for each season so that she could go where the weather was, you know.
Ideal.
But at the time, the people were so impoverished, it was nothing that her carts, like we read stories of her chariots would just roll over the people. And the people would, at that time, potatoes was the big thing, and it's the potato famine. So even the potatoes weren't growing well. And yet her columns and ceilings were painted with gold and silver and the most opulence that you could possibly imagine. So thinking through this misplaced trust of building their house, their home, their life on unrighteous things, mm-hmm. of the food and the clothing and the corruptible silver, gold, whatever. It's just devastating. Okay, so let's do the next one. Amos 6, 1 through 7.
What sorrow awaits you who lounge in luxury in Jerusalem, and you who feel secure in Samaria. You are famous and popular in Israel, and people go to you for help. But over to Calna and see what happened there. Then go to the great city of Hamath and go down to the Philistine city of Gath. You are no better than they were. And look at how they were destroyed. You push away every thought of coming disaster, but your actions only bring the day of judgment closer. How terrible for you who sprawl on ivory beds and lounge on your couches, eating the meat of tender lambs from the flock and of choice calves fattened in the stall. You sing trivial songs to the sound of the harp and fancy yourselves to be great musicians like David. You drink wine by the bowlful and perfume yourselves with fragrant lotions. You care nothing about the ruin of your nation. Therefore, you will be the first to be led away as captives. Suddenly, all your parties will end.
Wow. Okay, so complacency, pretend ignorance. I heard a call for peace when there's ruin happening. And so this one is a woe to complacency, and we'll tie it in more next time. And we don't have time to do the next one, the Malachi 3:5. We're going to do that next time. We'll open with it. I'll recap these because we're going to look at why is it important for us to know these passages and how it affects our resources. And what we do with our resources, it impacts how we can influence the kingdom. And we have to remind ourselves over and over that as a believer of Christ, a true follower, our purpose is to be a kingdom builder. And it's not that Jesus is against us having food, clothes, or even a nice house. It's what we do with it and how we hold on to those resources and how we're using those resources to bring him glory. Mm. We're so glad you're listening to Cultivating Hearts. God bless.